morning and welcome to the current edition of the Littman Crooks podcast. I'm Bernie Crooks, founding partner of the law firm Littman Crooks, and my guest today is Regina Filanino, who is the executive director of Advocates for Exceptional Children. Regina, welcome to the podcast.
Thank you for having me.
It's great to have you on the program. I guess let's start with what is Advocates for Exceptional Children?
It is an organization that primarily provides Medicaid service coordination to children with developmental disabilities.
And when parents have a child who's diagnosed with special needs, how do they know to call you?
There is a list that OPWDD has out there, and most of my clients also come from referrals.
And how does somebody know that OPWDD exists? I mean, I guess what I'm getting at is it's hard enough to be a parent, and then all of a sudden you have a parent and the kid has issues or special needs, and you don't know what to do. So who tells the parent you have to call OPWDD or you?
I find a lot of people find out about OPWDD either by their school, by other parents, by community supports, just in general.
And we've been talking a little bit about OPWDD. Does that stand for anything?
It stands for Office for People with Developmental Disabilities.
And how long has this office been around?
Before I was born.
Was it always called OPWDD?
No, it was called OMRDD. Office for People with Mental Retardation and Developmental Disabilities.
Ah, so it used the R word, which we're not supposed to use anymore.
Correct.
So it's the same thing, it's just called something different.
Correct.
And how do people become eligible for these services? If you live in a nice community like Scarsdale or Rybrook or Chappaqua, can you still get these services?
Absolutely.
So they don't count your assets or your income?
No, but it's two different processes. OPWDD eligibility is one thing, and then possibly what most folks think about is the Medicaid waiver. That's something else.
All right, so let's start with the Medicaid waiver. Does that come first?
No. OPWDD eligibility comes first.
Then let's start with that. So you're a parent, and you have a child, and kid's 3 years old, and the doctor says your son has autism. So what do you do?
Well, the first thing that you can do is talk to your school or talk to someone like me who can refer you to the eligibility unit, and usually they would deem someone eligible for their services.
And to be eligible, do you need to have a particular diagnosis?
Yes, certain diagnoses are helpful. There's also, they look at psychological evals, adaptive scores, physicals, that sort of thing.
Are they the same criteria that you would need to meet in order to have an IEP for school services?
Not necessarily. There's some children that have IEP services, and they don't necessarily necessarily eligible for OPWDD. It really depends.
So what's the application process like? Do you do it, or does the parent do it?
Well, the parent can call me, and I refer them to Matthew Faulkner at Department of Community Mental Health in Westchester County. He is the point person for the eligibility process, and he could work with the family directly.
Okay, so the family will probably do this on their own, and they'll get, one day somebody will call them up and say, you're in, you have benefits, you're signed up.
Correct. They would work with Matthew, and they would submit documentation to him, and then he would walk them through that whole process.
Is the documentation they submit strictly related to the disability, or is it also financial documentation?
It's strictly related to the disability.
So it has no bearing how much money the parents or the child have.
That's
everybody who meets the disability criteria can get on the OPWDD list.
That's correct.
And the benefits of being on the list are?
There's certain services through state dollars that people would be eligible for. Family support services are 100% state dollars. So if you're OPWDD eligible, you can tap into some of those services immediately once you're deemed eligible.
What if, I know a big issue for families is getting some free time. Let's say mom and dad want to go out to dinner. Will OPWDD provide somebody to come over and watch the child?
There are some agencies that are funded through 100% state dollars to have what they call respite. If a family is looking for different services, then they would have to go to the next level.
Okay, so you need to find an agency.
Correct.
And are those difficult to find?
There's a list that Hudson Valley DDRO will send out to the parent. And the parent can go down the list and call the agencies and see if there's availability.
And if there's not, then they go on a waiting list?
Yes.
And is Advocates for Exceptional Children one of those agencies?
We are not one of those agencies.
But you would be able to refer people to?
Correct.
Okay, so we've been talking about the OPWDD waiver, and our guest today is Regina Filanino, who's the Executive Director of Advocates for Exceptional Children. I've been reading a lot lately about the front door policy, and there's some dispute as to whether or not this is a good thing, a neutral thing, or a bad thing. Tell us about that.
Well, the front door process is really a way to assess people appropriately and to see what the needs are in order to provide these services to these people, to maintain them in the community.
And how does that differ from before we had the front door?
Well, people were getting into the system from multiple ways, and I think they're streamlining this process so that if I'm a parent and I live in Putnam County, I can theoretically go through the same process if I move to Westchester County, and therefore there's no confusion and everything stays the same.
So this has to do with the qualification for the services?
It has to do with an assessment. The front door liaisons will assess the individual and give some thought to it as to what services they would be eligible for.
Okay, so the different process is now, regardless of where you live, you're going to go through the same process in order to determine whether or not or what benefits you're going to get, whereas in the past, if you lived in one county, you might get completely different services than a similarly situated person in a different county.
Correct.
Okay, so why is there so much brouhaha over this?
It's actually we're providing more and more services to people because we're streamlining the process, and we're doing it the same no matter where we go. So it's making things easier for people.
So isn't that a good thing?
That is definitely a good thing.
Okay. So somebody has OPW, they're on the list, and they go through school, and then they age out, or they graduate high school or turn 21. Is there a role for OPWDD for these people at that time?
Absolutely.
And what is it?
Again, with OPWDD services, they would go through the front door. And especially if you're aging out of school, you're really a high priority to try to figure out what it is that you need in order to maintain optimal functioning and what do you want to do in the community. When you're an adult and you're graduating from school, they want to be creative and provide these services for you.
Are these transition services?
No.
So what are they?
These are not transition.
So what are they?
These are adult services.
DAHAB. Okay, so to explain to listeners what exactly DAHAB is.
DAHAB is basically a service, and, you know, again, the old way was when someone went to a facility and they engaged in different activities and, you know, they socialized with their friends. Now they're kind of getting away from that, and they're calling it either without walls, meaning people go out into the community and they're more integrated into the community.
And the OPWDD waiver pays for this?
Correct.
Does it also pay for transportation to get from home to the...
Some of the programs it does. It depends on the program.
And what about a person with disabilities who can work? Does OPWDD have any role in that?
They have different services that help either get a person ready to work or even help the person engage in the actual work.
All right, let's switch gears for a little bit now and talk about the Medicaid waiver. Initially, we said the order would be you'd apply for OPWDD first and then the Medicaid waiver. So when's the right time to apply for the Medicaid waiver, and what is it?
Well, the first thing the parents need to do is go through what they call this front door process. And the front door liaison will determine whether, number one, is the person already within the OPWDD system, meaning are they eligible? If they are eligible, then they should talk to that front door liaison and explain to that person, you know, what their child's needs are and what their wants are, and determine what service would best fit, you know, for that child. Once the services are identified, then at that time it is important that the parent reach out to what they call a Medicaid service coordinator.
And that's you?
And that is me.
And then what do you do once they reach out to you?
When they reach out to me, there's lots of paperwork that we have to go through and back and forth between the front door and the family. And once I get paperwork that determines what the person actually needs or wants, then if that person does not have Medicaid, then I would walk the parent through that process as well.
And the child will be eligible for Medicaid regardless of how much money mom and dad have?
That is correct.
And that lasts until what age?
That lasts until they are no longer deemed, if that could possibly be.
So even if the child turns 18, the Medicaid waiver would still
be still in place.
And that would pay for medical expenses?
Yeah, I mean, Medicaid is really, most of the people that come to me have primary health insurance. The children are covered under their mother or father's benefits. And Medicaid always becomes the last payer of services. They're the last resort. So it is a secondary form of insurance that pays for different types of services besides hospitalizations and co-payments and that sort of thing.
And do people ever get denied?
Not when they come to me.
Okay. If they're not wise enough to utilize your services, what are some of the reasons why people could get denied?
Well, in order to be deemed eligible for we are talking about the home and community-based waiver, not just a Medicaid waiver. What we're talking about under OPWDD's guidelines is what they call the home and community-based waiver. In order to be eligible for the home and community-based waiver, you have to be what they call ICF level of care, which means intermediate care facility. You have to be eligible for services within an ICF in order to be deemed eligible for the home and community-based waiver. So if you are not ICF level of care, then that's sometimes when it's problematic. Currently, we are dealing with that on a daily basis, but each case is being held, dealt with on a case-by-case basis.
So it's possible a child would be denied because he's not disabled enough?
It could be theoretically. I have not had it yet, but yes, theoretically, they could be.
And could the child also be denied if when he or she was born, the grandparents put some money in his or her name because the diagnosis didn't occur until he was 3 or 4 years old?
That is correct.
What do you do in those situations?
Well, again, in order to apply for Medicaid, you can have a certain amount to be eligible for Medicaid. But if it's over that certain amount, then you would have to possibly create a trust to protect that money.
So there are things that you can do if you
Absolutely.
Get the right advice.
Yes, yes.
Now, what does it mean when they say the Medicaid waiver? Sometimes people have told me it's closed.
It's not closed.
So anyone...
It is not closed.
So if you are eligible, both financially and physically, you can qualify.
Absolutely.
And is there a reason people shouldn't do this?
I think that the sooner people do it, the better, especially in this day and age, because the system that we practice in is constantly changing, and we don't really know how it's going to be, what it's going to be changing to. So if you believe that your child has a developmental disability, I would seek out physicians, schools, whatever, in order to get into this whole process.
So there's no downside to having it, is there?
Not that I'm aware of.
So even if you have it and don't use it, at least it's there in case you need it.
Well, in order to be eligible for the home and community-based waiver, you have to use a waiver service within a certain period of time. The state can look at your case and say, okay, you haven't used this service within a certain period of time, and they could possibly close the case. I have thus far seen that, but I'm thinking that as we go along and the system changes, I think they'll be looking at things more closely.
How often do you meet with the families who are on your watch?
Well, the guidelines are if somebody is living in their home with their parents, the minimum is 3 times a year. We, of course, don't do that because we just believe that 3 times a year is, we don't believe that that's really sufficient.
So you'll meet as necessary?
As necessary. It's really tailored to the individual needs. It really is.
If people want to find out more information, what do you suggest they do?
I suggest they reach out to their local office in Westchester, Rockland, Sullivan, or wherever wherever they're living. Each office is all over the state.
How would they find the number? Would they Google OPWDD?
They can Google OPWDD.
And then their county?
Exactly.
And then there'll be a number?
And there would be a number, yes.
Our guest today has been Regina Filanino, who's the Executive Director of Advocates for Exceptional Children. And Regina has given us some very important information on the OPWDD and Medicaid waiver. And I want to thank you for being on the program today.
Thank you very much.
Until next time, this has been the Littman Crooks Podcast. I'm your host, Bernie Crooks. So long, everyone.